Hello and welcome to The Art of Imagination. This is Tess from Jagged Edge Arts, and today I'll be speaking with author Charlaine Harris. She's best known for writing one of my favorite dark fantasy series, the long-running and best-selling Southern Vampire Mysteries, which was adapted into HBO's critically acclaimed show True Blood. Her Aurora Tea Garden cozy mystery series was also adapted into a whole slew of beloved TV movies, and her Midnight Texas trilogy was likewise adapted into a series that ran for 2 years on NBC. So she's had an incredible amount of success in her stories and characters reaching both avid readers and viewers on a large scale. For anyone who's seen these shows and not read the books, I can't encourage you enough to rectify that. Her series are always a lot of fun, very creative, and with a lot of memorable characters, and there's something about them that just pulls me in and makes me feel very happy, even when the subject is on the darker side. In addition to writing several other lengthy series, she's edited and contributed short stories to many anthologies. My personal favorite is a brilliant Christmas and werewolf-themed collection called Wolfsbane and Mistletoe. I have no words to describe how much I love that one. If you haven't read it, run, don't walk to go read it. It's great. Her latest series has been the Gunny Rose books, which I can only describe as an alternate history, wild western Russian fantasy adventure. That one's coming to a close this month, with the final book being released in just a couple of weeks, so don't miss it. I've included plenty of links in the description for people to peruse and highly recommend that you check them out because she's written across a whole bunch of genres and there's something very relaxing and engaging about her work. So, Charlaine, thank you so much for being here. I've enjoyed reading your work for years and every time I sit down with one of your books, I just know I'm going to have fun.
I like to have fun and I hope my readers do too.
It's funny, my mom actually introduced me to your books way back when.
Yay, Mom.
Yeah, she was watching True Blood when the first season aired and I didn't know anything about it. I hadn't seen it, but she mentioned that it was based on a book series she enjoyed and that she had several of the books at home. So I grabbed them off the shelf, started reading them, immediately fell in love with that Southern Gothic vibe and the style and characters and never looked back.
Oh, good.
And then in exploring your other series, I think it's wonderful how many books you've written, how many memorable stories you've created and that they've gotten such a great response as well.
That kind of had to build up.
Right.
My first few years were pretty lean and hungry years, but I wrote the right book at the right time. And, you know, it took 2 years for Dead Until Dark to get selected by an editor, 2 years of rejection. But I just had the inner conviction that this was my book and sooner or later someone would realize that and grab a hold of it.
I'm actually very curious why you thought that because you had done the Aurora Tea Garden books, you had done other work before that, especially considering how long it took Dead Until Dark to get published that first time. What was it about that book in particular that you felt was so strong and that you felt this is the one?
It was the book of my heart. It was the book where I just completely indulge my sense of humor and the lessons I wanted to impart, if that doesn't sound too pretentious.
Oh, not at all. But I'm a writer, so I know what you mean.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're all trying to say something beyond the plot line. We're all trying to say, this is my point of view and I think it's valid, or just think about this a little bit, you know, just don't think about this a little bit and see how it makes you feel. And I was just very into this book, carrying my message and my personality and my whole writing ethos.
Well, it came through. I mean, it's a wonderful book and a wonderful series.
You.
I think it's so hard to do a series that goes on for that many books and maintain the quality and the interest. But you did. You know, with a series like that, I get so invested. And then often after a point, you sometimes feel that the author's gone from writing for enjoyment and
yeah.
with passion to just kind of cranking them out without any heart, and it doesn't feel the same. But
it doesn't.
I never ran into that feeling with your books.
Well, thank you very much. I decided it within myself, and I should have shared this with my publisher, that when I didn't feel happy about writing another book, I would stop. And sure enough, I was getting to the point where I thought, is this fun anymore or is this just work? Because there were so many balls in the air to juggle towards the end. I'd started so many story threads that needed to be resolved. And about two books from the end, I thought, you know, it is time to start wrapping these up because I think I'm done. And I didn't want to write a stale book.
Right.
So I did start wrapping it up again, something I should have shared with my publisher.
I love it.
But, you know, I was afraid that they would talk me into doing more.
Right, that outside pressure.
They would have had a valid reason for doing that.
Of course.
Because they were making good money. And so was I. But I thought, you know, unless I say something decisively, it's going to be a struggle. And so I said something decisively. And, you know, the money was great. The people were great. The crowds at the signings were great, if tiring, but also exhilarating. You know, when you have a signing that big, a 40-person signing kind of pales in comparison.
Oh, I can imagine.
So I had a big bump getting back to real life.
Yeah, of course. You know, the characters are so important, and the story and the heart that you put into it as a writer, you don't want to lose that.
No.
And I think it's really bold that you chose to just publicly announce that you were going to finish such a big series and to just say, I'm done. so that nobody could change your mind. That was brilliant. And it had to have been a little scary to make that call.
Oh, so really scary, but I did it before I really thought about it too much, so I wouldn't talk myself out of it. But I knew it was the right thing to do. I'm sure no saint, and I love money as much as anybody else. But I just thought I would let everyone down, including myself, if I kept on with a series that my heart wasn't in.
Absolutely. It was bittersweet because for me, obviously, I love the story. And it's one of those books with so many characters, so many different plot lines that it's so easy to pick them up, reread them, and I definitely was sad to see it go. Anytime a series you love ends, there's always that feeling of loss and farewell, but you know that it's ending in the way that the author wants it to, which is nice.
Not that several thousand readers wanted me to end it that way.
Right.
And the backlash was pretty awful.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about that because I know that you've said that that period was one of the worst times of your life. And
it was.
I just, as a writer, I can't even imagine having that kind of backlash. First of all, totally unacceptable.
Yep.
The level that people took it to. It must have been so disconcerting for you to just have been going along with your story and suddenly have these people freaking out.
Yeah, and it was the bad thing. The ending of the book was released before the book came out.
Oh, wow.
By someone in Germany. And that was what led to the whole brouhaha. And after having so much love, I'd gotten spoiled, I guess. I'd gotten just bathed in love for so many years. And to get death threats, I just...
That's insane.
Well, I thought so too. And people said, oh, it's a tribute to your writing that they took it so seriously. I thought, no, I don't. I think this is something else. This is thwarted love or something, because people wanted the books to end differently. And that wasn't what I chose. I thought, as I drew towards the end, I thought, uh-oh, this may not go well. And I did everything but draw a big arrow going, not going to end it this way, not going to end it this way. But I guess if you have it set in your head how it's going to end, you don't really pay attention to that. And there was a lot of shock and horror and dismay and unfortunately a lot of very unpleasant name calling and so on. Threats against my children.
Oh my God. No.
I know it.
That is not passion for something. That is just...
That's insanity.
And insanity.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
When books end, everybody will have their own ideas or expectations. But
sure.
You do have to acknowledge that it is the author's choice. It's their story. To me, it wasn't a surprise. To plenty of readers, it wasn't a surprise because, I don't know, I think you made it quite clear all throughout the series that Sam was the one that was there for her and he didn't come with all the baggage of these vampires and, you know, having to live in the dark with all the politics and the danger. That was the perfect ending. I loved it. And I think that it has to have been more of a vocal minority that was just a very loud minority that wasn't happy with it.
I think you're right, Tess. And once I said Sookie loved the sun, she loved to sunbathe, I'm saying she's not going to choose to be a vampire. And Eric made it clear that, you know, he would turn her. And I just thought I owed it to her to give her a happy ending. She was just a good companion for several years. And I owed that to her. And I did what I thought would make her happiest. I think the really vocal people, and I have to say this, Tess, they have never said any of this to my face.
Of course not. No.
Not a single person has ever said any of this to my face. So I thought they just had the courage of anonymity.
Yeah, that is a big problem. People feel safer being nasty from a distance when nobody knows it's them.
Yeah.
I thought it couldn't have ended differently. I got chills at the part where she had the cluvial d'or. Was that?
The cluvial d'or.
I got a great rush of emotion when she had that line about it was Sam, it was always Sam. And then she used it to save his life. And it was so beautifully done. And I thought, how could anybody not like that? And of course, people are entitled to their opinions, but it just seemed to be a ridiculous reaction to something that made sense and that you had quite clearly built up to over the years.
I thought so too. I told Alexander Skarsgård it was all his fault.
Yeah. I do think there's a problem with people conflating the TV series and the book series because they're nothing alike. Nothing. The TV series took some general ideas and character names and personalities, but it's not like it's a faithful adaptation. It totally went in a different direction. It has very little to do with the book series as you wrote it.
Yeah. On the other hand, it really boosted the sales of the books.
Of course, yeah.
So for me, it was all good. All good.
Does it get a little frustrating, though, sometimes with people conflating the two? Does it ever bother you when people talk about the series True Blood as if it's your books?
Yes, it does. I have to ask them to differentiate when they ask me questions. And it's clear that to me, they're not talking about the books, they're talking about the television show. And I say, I can't answer questions about that. I didn't write it. I didn't have anything to do with it after a certain point, though I was always welcome on the set. And I enjoyed meeting a lot of the people involved on both sides of the camera. But that was a separate entertainment experience.
Yes, very much so. I see why the TV show was so popular, but to me, the books just have a lot more heart. I just loved immersing myself in the whole world with all the characters, the style, the atmosphere. It was all just so beautiful. And I love picking it back up and just revisiting it.
Oh, thank you.
It's lovely. I am sorry that you dealt with all that, but it seems like you've come out the other end of that and gotten past
it.
Yeah,
it was a big learning curve. I was very sorry it happened, but I'm glad to have come through, as you say.
Going back to well before that, I've seen you say in other interviews that your parents really created a reading-friendly atmosphere, that it was a big part of your childhood. Your whole home was very much an environment that encouraged reading and then I guess later writing. Do you have any early memories of that experience of either your parents reading to you or you reading your first book with them or stuff that first ignited your passion for literature?
Just seeing my parents read, and I had an older brother who has since passed, but he also was a reader. And my mother really did not like reading out loud, so she did not do that. But she encouraged me to, we would go to the library, which in Tunica, Mississippi at that time, which was many, many years ago, had a very poor library. It's much better now. And they would buy me books, which was a big luxury. And they very seldom really vetoed anything I wanted to read. So there were books everywhere. My father had a book in every room. He would just read the book in whatever room he was in. I have never done that. I'm just a one book at a time person.
Yeah, me too. But
he was just quite a reader, and so was my mother. I think it was the great bond between them that they were both avid readers. And my brother was too. We liked to read. We liked to talk about books. We liked to find good books to read. It was just something that was really revered in our house, and that made the rest of my life so much better.
That's a lovely way of growing up in terms of inspiring the imagination, I think. My mom is like your dad. She's very much somebody who'll be reading three books at once. And I'm like, Mom, just pick a story and go with it.
How can you juggle like that? Yeah.
I know, right?
That's the way I felt.
I think I heard you mention at one point that you have an interest in ancient mythology. Is that true? Because one of my earliest exposures to literature was my dad reading ancient Greek and Norse myths at the table to me and my brother.
Wow. So
that's a lifelong passion. That was one of the first things that he used to read aloud to us and that then I would read later on. Are there any particular myths that you are very passionate about, or have you ever thought about incorporating some of that mythology or that type of storytelling into your work?
Those are wonderful stories. I did have to bone up on Norse mythology for a short story I just wrote for an anthology about Valkyries.
Oh, nice.
I was really excited about being asked to contribute. sometimes I have to say no, but that one I thought, you know, that would be fun. So I enjoyed writing that book, that short story, excuse me. Really looking forward to the book coming out because I want to read all the other stories. We had to pick our Valkyrie name and, you know, so we wouldn't use anybody else's Valkyrie. And anyway, it was fun. It was different and I enjoyed it. That was my big dip into Norse mythology.
That's cool. I'm excited to read that.
Oh, me too. Me too. I'm a big fan of other writers. To me, that's the best thing about being a writer. You know, you get to meet other writers and they think you're their peer. Yeah. Big masquerader syndrome going on there.
Speaking of anthologies, you've done so many of them. So yes. You brought that up was one of the points I wanted to talk about is how your story fits in with all the others in an anthology. Is that something that's particularly fun to see at the end? You write your own story and then you see a look at what everybody else has done and how it all fits together.
Oh, I loved it. Writing those anthologies was just great. I got an offer to do anthologies with a famous anthologist in Green Bay. He came to me and asked me if I would like to edit some anthologies for him because that's all he did was short story collections. And I said, well, if my friend Tony Kilmer, also writing as Lee Perry, can do it with me, yes, I'd love to because Tony is a much better editor than I am. And she can articulate why she likes or doesn't like a story. I can just say, oh, there's something wonky here, but she can say, yes, line 3, paragraph 2. She's just sharp as she can be. Marty accepted that, and we had so much fun because that was when I was really hot. And when we would draw up a dream list of people we wanted to contribute, half from mystery and half from science fiction or fantasy. And almost always they would say yes. So we had a really interesting mix of people writing things they wouldn't necessarily write otherwise. And it was so exciting to see what we got and how it would work and what comments we could offer to make it better. It was so much fun. Very time consuming, but a lot of fun. Tony and I worked out a whole system of how to split the work and we just had an excellent time.
That sounds like so much fun. And I'll tell you, I've enjoyed those anthologies so much. One of my very favorite short story collections is Wolfsbane and Mistletoe. Always loved werewolves, always loved Christmas. And the brilliance of putting those two themes together just blew me away. It was kind of my personal ideal Christmas collection, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I read it so many times that it just brings me so much joy.
I'm so glad because we enjoyed it the heck out of that. And we got some great stories.
Shapeshifters Anonymous, probably one of the funniest stories I've ever read in my life. I was crying laughing.
Who was that one by? Do you remember?
J.A. Conrath.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah, was good.
That was absolutely lost it. With the wear coral in the bathtub. I mean, it was just so clever.
It was very inventive.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed those. I know you've said that writing short stories is a lot harder than writing full novels for you, but you've done so many of them.
Well, it was in an effort to up my game. At first it was just like pulling teeth and it's still quite difficult because you have to pare down so much. And every word counts. It has to count. And that's a high standard to stick to. I have a couple of friends who are very, very good at short stories. And I keep thinking, oh, if I could write one that was as good as theirs, then I'd feel like I had really done something. But I don't think I've gotten there yet. I keep trying, though.
Well, even if writing them is harder, what do you personally enjoy about reading short stories? Because you obviously have enjoyed plenty of them over the years.
I enjoy the compactness, the skill the writer has to show in getting in all the information that's necessary, nothing that isn't necessary, and then providing the punch at the end, which a short story simply has to have. With a book, you kind of have a long, long time to get to that punch. But with a short story, it has to be instant and pertinent.
I struggle with that myself because I love writing and taking my time to tell stuff. And it depends on the subject, though, right? Because if you've got something that's as rich as the Sookie universe or you know, other people like the Dresden Files, something that's so full of characters and lore, I can see how it'd be really hard to condense that to a very short story.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you come up with maybe something totally separate, that seems like an interesting way to test the waters for a new idea. Is that kind of how Gunny Rose started?
Gunny Rose started with a short story for a charity anthology, and I was really pleased to be invited to contribute, which, you know, I'm not always, but I was, and I thought, I'm just going to write something completely different. I need to, like, cleanse my palate. So I thought of this very tough young woman who shoots for a living, shoots people for a living.
Shoots men for a living.
Chiefly men. That idea was strangely attractive. I thought, how can I make it so that she doesn't get arrested and put in jail? So I had to create this whole world around that. And it just got more and more clear to me. And I just enjoyed writing her so much. I just couldn't let her go. And I got approached by another publisher, and he said, what do you really want to write? And I thought, oh, I know what I really want to write. I want to write more books about Gunny. And I have really enjoyed it. The sixth one will be out in July.
It's a wonderful series. It's so unique. And have you seen Firefly?
Uh-huh.
I always loved how that blended the Wild West with space opera and Chinese influences. And not that the two are directly comparable, but I feel like you've done the same kind of cross-genre work with Gunny, creating this alternate history Western vibe mixed with classical Russian influence and magic. You're not going to look at another series and find that exact makeup.
Thank God. Yeah. It was taking a chance. And at first I thought, no magic. But you know, I had to have it. And I think the series needed it. Otherwise, it would have just been another alternate history American thing. The series needed the magic and the Russian influence. And I just blended together a lot of things I'm interested in. And I had a great time writing it.
I did notice, obviously, it's a major element of Gunny Rose. But also in Sookie, you've got Alexei at one point, and I know you've got this interest in the Romanovs that pops up in your writing. Where did that interest come from? What is it about them that's so intriguing to you?
The doom, the everything you ever wanted in their lives, the royalty, the money, we're the rulers and no two ways about it. And then the doom that fell upon them and how they handled that and their incredibly tragic end. And the fact that for a long time they didn't find all the bodies they have now. And the fact that there are still Romanov relatives around. You know, those remains have been buried in a cathedral in Russia now. And I have to find that incredibly weird. And I felt for those young people so strongly. Their lives had just turned upside down. They had no rescue, no recourse. And whatever they might have been was not going to happen. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if they had been rescued or had found a way to get out by themselves? I just found that. I thought, how would it have happened? And well, once you start down that road, you just keep on going.
Well, it's a great idea. And it's a great way to bring that interest of yours into such a unique setting, especially with a character like Gunny. It's just been such a pleasure reading that. It feels very new and fresh.
Oh, thank you.
But going way back to the start, Sweet and Deadly was the first book you wrote, right?
Yep.
And it was also the first one you published. But did you write anything leading up to that, like short stories or novellas? Or was that the first time you actually sat down to seriously write something?
It was the first time I wrote a book.
Wow. That's amazing.
I know. Pretty damn fortunate, right?
Right.
I had a lot of good luck and I made some of my own good luck with that. But I have no backlog in my bottom drawer. You know, everything I've ever written book-wise has been published. So that's a very happy position to be in.
It's an incredible position to be in. And did you write that on a typewriter back then?
Yep. That typewriter was my wedding present from my husband. And it was an electric typewriter. So it was state of the art, honey. And I wrote my first two books on that typewriter.
That is incredible. I actually wrote a murder mystery on a typewriter in fifth grade.
Congratulations.
Well, I can't imagine trying to do it in a way that would be presentable to a publisher with just having to go back and fix things that were incorrect. And
I know.
Oh my God, I can't imagine how you did that.
Moving text around, I thought about it real hard is what I did.
Yeah, of course.
Moving text around is one of the greatest boons a computer gives you. And you can easily correct yourself. And I just,
yes,
I love that so much.
And you can go back and keep tweaking things as you go along, or you get a scene later on, you're like, oh, this should be changed, and you just fix it.
Or if you have a better idea, you say, oh, yes, I just have to go back in two chapters and establish that earlier, and it will make more sense. And I just, that flexibility is everything.
Well, I'm amazed by anyone who's managed to write entire publishable manuscripts without the convenience of modern computers, especially for series, because there's so much that changes along the way. But those early novels were standalone books, right?
Yes. The first two books were standalones.
And then you started off with Aurora Tea Garden as your first series.
Yep.
Did you intend for that to be a series when you went into it, or was that just an idea that came into your head and you wrote a book and then thought, oh, her story still has somewhere to go. Let me elaborate on that.
When my publisher said, are you going to write more books about this woman? I said, yes, yeah. I sure am. How many do you want?
Yeah. So you wrote a whole bunch of them, but then took a 13-year break,
yeah,
which is amazing to me, because after that much time, I would have assumed that was that. But then you came back and wrote two more of them out of nowhere.
Two more books, yeah. Well, one reason is that the TV series was so popular, and my publisher asked me, are you going to write any more? That would be great now that she's in the news again. And I thought, well, I did leave her at a point where I would be glad to pick her up. Kind of subtly modernized her, because the first ones, there weren't any cell phones, there weren't any this, there weren't
right,
any
right,
that.
Right.
And I thought, let's just go, poof, it's now, rather than try to keep her firmly back then. And nobody has protested that. Nobody has said, oh, suddenly she's in the modern era. And I thought, yeah, you know, people just accept that. And they did.
Coming back to that story after so long, do you feel like your style or approach to the character or universe you created so long ago changed at all, aside from those updates?
No, I'm sure it did. And the fact that I hope I had acquired more skills as a writer and more perspective from my experiences. I wanted to write about her being a wife and a mother. And I did that. And then I got asked if I would write more. But I thought, no, what kind of mom with an infant is going to go around investigating murders? That's just, after the last book, I thought that would just be irresponsible. And I'm not going to say that she's going to be that kind of mom. She's going to be a good mom. I owed that to her. So I thought, no more.
I think that's great. It goes back to what you said about ending series when you feel it's time.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that story, you probably could have just kept publishing those. But it's nice that you set that up as an ending that you were happy with, and you said, I'm done. That's her story.
Well, if I'm not happy, what's the point in doing it?
Yeah, actually, on that note, the joy that you get from writing, obviously, you have to balance that as a professional writer. Where do you find the line between your own creative vision and the stories that you want to tell, and having to respect what the publisher wants, or the marketability, the commercial value? I mean, how much pressure does that put on your own creative vision or the stories that you want to tell?
Lately, it's been harder for me to write as much per day as I used to. Part of that's the fact that I'm 73. I had to have numerous surgeries in the past few years. And then I had COVID twice. So my brain was not where it should have been. And finally, I got my brain back and started working. And I love it just as much, but I would rather not work as fast. However, I've got a deadline in July that I have to meet, and I'm having to really push myself. And so far, I'm meeting my own expectations. We'll see if I keep on doing that. But I have to keep my word count up much more than I used to. So I'm having to really think, okay, I'm just going to power through it and rewrite a little every day and then see what I've got by the time I have to turn it in.
Have you ever had to set aside any stories or ideas that you were interested in doing because you were told it wasn't going to be commercially viable, or because they just wanted you to focus on something else? Or are you pretty much able to just do what you want and see where it goes?
Well, luckily for me, right now, I'm at a point where I can just, you know, present my ideas, and if they don't like them, well, they've always liked mine. If they said, no, that sounds awful, I would have to start thinking about something else. Luckily, this series I just started, because the sixth book is the last Gunny Rose book. So my publisher said, well, what are you going to do next? And I thought, I guess that means I'm not going to write any more Gunny Rose books. That's what it means. So I don't always get to pick. But the book I'm writing now, I'm just having a really great time. It's probably, you do this too. Do you tell yourself a story to go to sleep at night?
I imagine other worlds.
I
visualize stuff in my head of like scenes from movies that don't, my own book ideas as movies, basically.
Well, this is the story I've been telling myself for years that I'm making a book out of, and it's been unexpectedly fun.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. So that's going to be your next project, or that's what you're working on now that Gunny Rose is over, and that'll be coming out later on.
That's what I'm doing.
What genre is it? Can you share that? I know you don't want, you can't share a lot right now, I'm sure.
Well, no, I guess it's science fiction. Yeah, I guess. I don't know what else
we'll
I
see
would
where
call
it, goes.
It. Yeah, it's just really hard to describe, but it is science fiction, I guess. So I've got my foot in that camp now.
Well, I'm sure whatever it is, it's going to be entertaining, because I think one of the most wonderful things about your work is that you know how to create characters that draw the reader in and make them feel like part of the town or part of the story, which I think is such a wonderful way of writing. I love, you know, hard sci-fi that's a lot of jargon and complex concepts that I don't fully understand and all that. But sometimes it's nice to just feel included in this universe. And I think that's something about your writing that stands out, is that you pull the reader in and just make them feel like they're sitting at a table in the corner watching this happen, you know, the local restaurant or something.
That's great. That's what I'm going for. I'm glad to hear that it worked with you.
Very much so. Obviously, you've done a lot within the mystery genre, but within that, you've branched out to various other genres like paranormal with Sookie, which I love. But you got your start in cozy mysteries.
Yep.
I have to say, my mother loves cozy. She has hundreds of them. I don't even know. That's all she reads going to bed every night, is these cozy mysteries.
Oh, well, yay her.
She loves them. And I was wondering, I know that you've said that in the past, cozy mysteries were looked on as kind of the fallback for people who didn't really succeed at real mysteries.
Who couldn't really write.
Right.
I got a lot of that when I started out. A lot of the not covered at all snobbery. Open dismissing of people who write cozies, and it pissed me off pretty bad.
Rightfully so.
There are some book people who are like that. Like, oh, it's so much easier to write a cozy. They're so unrealistic. Like every private eye got up from his hospital bed and said, no matter whether I'm being paid or not, I'm going to tear myself out of this hospital and pull out my own IV line and go find that killer.
Right, exactly. Which is ridiculous.
That is so realistic. I just thought, we're just being unrealistic in different ways. I don't see why getting beaten up really qualifies you to be a better writer. Of course, some of that was sour grapes, because I hated not having the respect that most male writers had then. But I feel like Sisters in Crime has done so much to change that and change the viewpoint of a lot of readers and a lot of writers and a lot of bookstores. And I'm very proud to be a lifelong member of Sisters in Crime. It's really a very valuable organization.
Yes. Seeing these types of organizations do the work they do to support women in literature, and especially in genres that are dominated by male writers, many of whom have a very particular view, is amazing. You know, I love dark, gritty, gory crime authors like Karen Slaughter. I read tons of that. But I sometimes also just want something cozy like Aurora, and it all has value.
Yes.
One isn't better. They just serve different purposes. And like you said, traditional mysteries or crime thrillers are in no way more realistic.
No, and sometimes you're in the mood for that, just like sometimes you're in the mood for steak and sometimes you're in the mood for Southern fried chicken. It just depends on what your taste is at the moment.
What drew you to cozy mysteries in the beginning? Obviously, you read a big range of genres as well, but was there something about the genre that you were personally drawn to as both a reader and writer?
I had read a lot of mysteries and I thought, I can do that. I knew that was in my wheelhouse, shall we say. I knew that was something I could do. It just fit what I wanted at the moment. And I thought, okay, I can write a mystery. That's what I'm going to do. And I knew a lot more about a more domestic mystery than I was qualified to write a hard-boiled mystery. So that was what I wrote. And I was terrified at first, but I kept telling myself, you know, I can do this. I know I can do this. And I could. It was just hard. And that is the good thing about it, because that's what weeds out a lot of people. It's hard to do.
Definitely not easy. I was actually talking about this with somebody else the other day about the fact that with writers, there's this sense that a lot of people have that they don't have when it comes to other industries or skills, that, oh, I could write a story. Anybody could write a story. I could write a book if I wanted to. And it's like, no, I don't think you could. You know, there's the...
You go do that and let me know how it works out.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think it's great that that genre first got you into writing to realize that you had that drive and that talent to tell these kinds of stories and then branch out from there. And like you've said, the landscape over the years has shifted significantly to where things like cozy mysteries are taken a lot more seriously.
Yeah.
There's certainly been a change, you know, over the last few decades, I would think, as far as how they're viewed. But talking about things like Sisters in Crime, there's obviously a lot of inequality still in the world at large, but also in writing, as far as how women are paid, how female writers are viewed, and the respect that they're given in comparison to male writers, just in general. Obviously, there are exceptions, but you've done such a good job of creating really strong female characters, whether lead roles, supporting cast members of these stories. You've done a really good job of making women who are strong in spite of having serious circumstances that they've dealt with. And I'm really curious, having heard you talk in the past about these issues with gender equality and things like that, the importance of having these female role models and characters that women can read books and think, I see myself in that person, and they're strong, but they're strong in different ways. What do you feel makes a really good female role model?
Not being defeated. That's a big question, but I think not being defeated. I think rising back up, no matter what the punch down was, and refusing to stay down, I think that's what makes a strong woman. I am proud of writing strong women. They're not invulnerable. They're not perfect. They have weaknesses, but they are determined to overcome ills done against them.
I think it's lazy when you get a female character that's just perfect at everything. It becomes a fantasy. You know, it doesn't represent real women. And I think that it's very nice that you have characters that do have flaws. They have weaknesses, but they feel real in how they deal with them. That's a really nice thing to see just as a woman who reads.
That's good to hear, because that was my goal.
I think it's so interesting that you primarily write from the first person point of view of the single protagonist. But then in some series, like with Midnight Texas, which I was sorry there weren't more. I love that world. It was a great collection of characters, but still, it was a really nice trilogy as it is. And what was there was good. So, I'm sorry it didn't go on for long.
I enjoyed it. Well, you know, the sales just weren't anywhere close to the Sookie sales. And my publisher, of course, didn't care for that, because that was the same publisher. And in fact, they gave me the heave-ho after that. But I did enjoy writing those books. And every now and then I think about going back to it and writing one more book, but I don't know who would publish it. That's kind of iffy, and I just seem to have other stuff to do right now. But I wouldn't completely erase that off my to-do list.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed, because it was a great world. It was such a good ensemble story. Although I love the first person lead protagonist, one person perspective, I think it was nice to see you shift into these different characters, third person narration, and have multiple perspectives. And I know you did that a bit with Gunny Rose in a recent book as well.
It's good for me to do that. I like writing first person, because you can fully inhabit the character, but not every story can be told from that point of view.
Switching to a different character in Gunny Rose, like her sister, what made you decide to do that? Because you had several books with Gunny being the character, the main character, and from her perspective, and then suddenly you had this shift. Was that something you actively decided to do, or was it just as you were writing, you started finding yourself wanting to explore that?
To me, it became more and more a fact that this was a story of the two sisters. Gunny was the older, but her sister is coming along. She has a bizarre background, completely different from Gunny's. And I thought it would be interesting to get into that a little bit more and show what it was like for her growing up. And the fact that she was spelled to look younger than she was for so many years. And then she has this growth spurt to make up for it. And she finds out she has all these gifts, and they're scary gifts. They're terrifying, and she has to master that. But she is a reckless and brave young woman in a different way from Gunny. And I enjoyed writing her. In the last book, you'll see both of them. And it has a huge ending, a huge ending. I thought when I was writing, I thought, how is this going to end? I don't know. What's going to happen? And then all of a sudden, it just came to me. And I thought, oh, thank you, God. This is, I really needed this. And from there on, I was kind of galloping to the end.
Oh, now I'm so excited to read this last one. And it's such a great feeling when that happens, isn't it? When you have a general idea of where you want to go, but you can't quite see it. And then suddenly it all just clicks.
Yes. That click is so beautiful. I wish I could record it and play it back.
I had an experience where I was trying to work through a big plot point in the third book of the series I'm working on now. And I was really struggling with it because it was so important and a major defining element of the broader story. And I knew I just had to get it right. And then one day I was on vacation in Long Island and I went out into a little kayak and tied myself to a buoy. And I said, I'm not coming back home until I figure this out.
You put yourself in a prison.
I lay in the kayak with my notebook and just bobbed there for something like 2 or 3 hours. And I suddenly had that click. And I thought, oh, that's how I'm going to fix it. And I went back and I started writing. And it was so inspiring. It was such a nice jolt of inspiration.
It is. It's like getting hit by lightning.
Yeah, it's the best feeling. It's so good. With Gunny Rose, you were saying that you got that spark and you charged towards the end with something that you do have to do that level of world building for, where it goes on for several books. Once those ideas come into your head, a character like Sookie comes into your head and you start building the setting and the world around her, is there a point at which you have to stop and say, okay, now I have this universe, I have to actually actively create some rules or do a bit of more intentional world building now that the idea is there? What's your process for building these worlds and this lore and the settings and characters and rules and all that? Do you just do it as it comes along? Or
you have to plan a little bit more when you're going to be writing about the world. First, I had Sookie was going to date a vampire. I thought, well, why would anybody do something that stupid? And the answer was because she couldn't date a regular human. I thought, okay, why is that? And I went through a ridiculous list of disabilities until I thought, okay, she can read human minds and I really can't think of anything worse.
Yeah.
I mean, if you knew what was going through people's minds as you talked to them, it would be utterly squelching, utterly. And I thought, okay, that is a big problem. And that would turn anyone towards an alternative dating experience.
Alternative dating experience. That's a great way of putting it.
Well, that was the whole key of the whole book. And I had to build the world around that basic thing, that basic fact in her life. And I had to imagine what would have created her surviving in that way. So I had to have Gran, and I had to have a brother, because we've all known a Jason, I think. She had to have a brother that didn't understand her, but mostly sometimes supported her. And then he had to have a best friend. And it just, what kind of job could she deal with having that disability? So it just grew from that one idea. It grew outwards to create the world she lives in.
That's so cool. Every writer's methods are so different. And I love hearing about how each person fleshes out their original ideas and brings them to life step by step, because my approach is much more chaotic. And it's fascinating to get a sense of how other writers go about that process. But it sounds like you have a much more structured approach to world building than I do, certainly.
Well, I start out with a mustard seed and then it grows. I did have a friend who she was on her fourth year of establishing the world, her fourth year. And I said, but have you written the book? And she said, well, no, I'm still working on the world. And I thought, I see a big problem here.
It's definitely important to find that balance. You obviously need to actively think about and develop what you're writing so that you're not just winging it to end up with a big mess. But you do actually have to start writing it at some point. I agree. You can't get stuck in all the nitty gritty and preliminaries forever.
Yeah. Even if you work things out as you're writing, if you have the basic premise, you can take everything else on a case by case basis.
Well, it sounds like you've got a system that works well for you, and I can't argue with the results. So to wrap things up, I've heard you say that you don't read reviews because it's toxic. And I get that, because it can be great when someone says something nice, but then it can be utterly soul crushing when people are nasty just for the sake of it. So it's definitely a healthy choice to stay away from all that. Was there a point early on when you did look at that sort of thing, or have you always just been kind of, I'm going to keep a distance from all that?
Well, I'll tell you when I quit. It was when I was writing the Suki books and People magazine called one of them the worst book of the year.
Did they really? Oh, please.
In a People magazine, which I subscribe to, and I'm reading this. I thought, everybody's reading this. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to read reviews anymore because it's too upsetting. The book is out there. I can't take it back and change it. I did what I did. I did the best I could.
Nor do I think you should have to change it. I don't think you should have to feel that that's something you would have to do. You
know, it's
because everybody's opinions are going to be different. The greatest thing in the world is still going to be hated by someone.
Yes, that is so true. And that's going to be the person who puts a review in.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially the Amazon reviews where people would say, this book costs too much. I give it a zero. And I thought, like, I had anything to do with the price of the book.
No one should get bogged down by that stuff. I've talked to people who do read reviews of their own work, and I'm always amazed. Like, why do you do that to yourself? But what I like about your attitude is that you don't just avoid negativity in relation to your own work, but also other people's. I know that on your site, you've got recommendations, not reviews, but recommendations, which I think is so lovely that you're promoting stuff that you enjoy and not saying this is stuff I don't like, but this is stuff I do like. And here are reasons why you might like it, too.
I just can't think of a reason anybody would do that. I mean, this is a tough industry, and the last thing I want to do is pontificate about a book I thought was bad. That is not my place in this world. I love reading, and one thing I love to do is promote reading. And if me saying, wow, this was a good book by so-and-so, here's a little bit about what happens, I loved it. That's what I do. And that makes me happy. And I hope other people do go out and buy one of them or two of them or all of them, because nobody reads one book a year. I mean, nobody I know anyway. And I just like to think that people are finding new things to read because I say, I love this book. You might too.
I think that's a really nice way of looking at it. It's not just the writers, but the readers to have that positivity, because I do feel that when people start saying, oh, I hated this because, you know, it had this scene or it had this character, and you know, okay. So you might not like something, but somebody else might love it. And
yeah,
I think it's nice that you do just provide recommendations, and keeping the focus on the good is a really nice attitude to have.
I try. Some days it's harder than others.
Fair enough. But knowing that, is there something that you do aside from not reading reviews to just kind of keep yourself positive about your work and your characters without getting influenced by people on the outside with their own expectations, their own views?
Well, I'm kind of at the stage in my career where I'm just going, what the hell? If I feel really insecure, I'll call my agent and ask him how many books I've sold worldwide. You know, I said, just tell me again. I just want to hear it. Isn't that pretty feeble? But every now and then, like almost every writer I know, I think I have the imposter syndrome where I think someday they're going to find out I really can't do this. Someday they're going to not publish me. And that's when I put in the call.
Amazing.
He's used to it.
I get that. I understand. But I think it's nice that you're at least at a point where you can just kind of say, I have done a good job. I have a lot of people who've enjoyed my stuff. If there are some people who haven't, who cares? You know, because there's so many other people that have.
Yeah. It took me a while to get there, but I'm there.
I'd just like to close by asking, right now, I feel like we're in a bit of a literary crisis with a very low literacy rates in this country.
Yeah.
Especially with the social media generation. There's so many kids just sitting around watching YouTube all day, and they're not reading on the level that we were when I was growing up in the 80s, 90s. When I was younger, kids always had books on the buses and trains, even when we sometimes had our Walkmans or Discmans as well. But now they're all staring at their phones 24/7. Do you think there's something people can do to encourage more young folks to detach from all that and get more into literature again?
Well, you can set the example. Setting the example of reading it, enjoying it, and recommending it. There's nothing like that. Also, on a more practical side, if people can't read really well by the time they're in junior high, statistically, they will never make as much money in their life as people who can read well. That is a fact. It's grim and upsetting, but if you can't read well by then, your income is down.
Wow, that's a sobering thought. And I hope that we can change the trend.
I hope so too.
As far as I'm concerned, books are the doorway to the imagination.
They are.
You can do anything in writing, and it encourages creativity and intellectual thought in the readers too.
And gosh knows there are so many excellent YA books around now. The field has just boomed with so many good writers. If they go unread, it would be a tremendous pity.
I agree. So I'm going to start by encouraging people to read your next book, your next anthology as well.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking this time to talk to me and to share your experiences. I mean, I love your work. You have a very warm, very lovely way of writing and world building, even when you're dealing with dark material.
I don't want them to close the book and throw it across the room.
Yeah. Well, I will continue reading, and I will continue encouraging others to do the same. And I'm very excited to see what happens at the end of Gunny Rose.
Well, thank you.
And also to read your upcoming short story and the rest of that anthology. I love Norse myths, so Valkyries are always a win. And I can't wait to see the next series you're working on now, too. I bet it's going to be all kinds of interesting, as always, especially venturing a little more into sci-fi.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Charlaine Harris, such a lovely, positive person and creative mind who's been entertaining so many of us for decades now. I really enjoyed speaking to her. And again, I encourage everyone to check out the links in the description and pick up some of her books, because they never fail to entertain. The final Gunny Rose book, which is called The Last Wizard's Ball, is coming out later this month, July 22nd. You can pre-order it now, so be sure to get it. And of course, read the rest of the series if you haven't done so already. Also, look out for the anthology Death Maidens, edited by Henry Hertz. And keep an eye on Charlaine's site for updates on her next series and other works. Thank you so much for listening to The Art of Imagination, and hopefully we'll see you again next time.